Welcome to the Lawyer Education Series. My name is Kirsty Irving and I am the Legal Education Officer in the Domestic Violence Unit at Legal Aid. Melanie Alexander is a Senior Solicitor with the Legal Aid Domestic Violence Unit. Melanie is experienced in both family law and criminal law and will be talking today about the intersection of Condition 6 on ADVOs and family law.
Thanks for having me today, Kirsty.
It's nice to have you with us. Firstly, Mel, can you start by explaining what Clause 6 is?
Sure. ADVOs in New South Wales have both mandatory orders and they also have additional orders. They are orders that restrict a defendant's behaviour towards protected people. In terms of the mandatory order, that's condition 1 on the AVO, and that order says that a defendant must not do any of the following to a protected person or anyone the protected person has a domestic relationship with. A, they must not assault or threaten them. B, they must not stalk, harass or intimidate them. And C, they must not intentionally or recklessly destroy or damage any property or harm an animal that belongs to or is in the possession of that person. In addition to that condition, there's also a number of additional conditions that can be included. One of those additional conditions is Condition 6. Condition 6 says, the defendant must not approach or contact the protected person or persons in any way unless that contact is A, through a lawyer, B, to attend accredited or court-approved counselling, mediation and or conciliation, or C, as ordered by this or another court about contact with the child or children, or D, as agreed in writing between the defendant and the parent or parents about contact with the child or children. And also there's condition E, which says, as agreed in writing between the defendant and the person with parental responsibility for the children or about contact with the child or children. Mm-hmm. Order 6E is an order that's an alternate order to 6D, and you would mostly only see order 6E if the Department of Community Services was involved.
I see.
So condition 6 is typically used when there's a matter that also includes a family law dispute. So for example, a protected person and the defendant may have children together. This clause specifies the way in which defendants can legally contact that protected person. The section that I intend to focus on and talk about today is condition 6D, because that's the section that allows defendants and protected persons to enter into a written agreement in relation to contact with any children. And that section is often the one that most comes up in the local court when the court is looking to impose condition 6D.
Great. So Mel, how can parties enter into an agreement pursuant to condition 6D?
So Kirsty, if we look at the other sections of Condition 6, they say that parties can enter into an agreement via a lawyer, via mediation, or via a court order. So entering into an agreement can occur before or after there's an interim or a final ADVO that's made, or it could occur on the day at court, or it could occur afterwards, and that might include via a mediation or negotiations with a solicitor. It's important to remember that neither party can force the other to enter into any written agreement, and if there is no written agreement in place, then the parties need to utilise the other options in Condition 6, which remain in place, because the defendant might then breach the AVO if they contact the protected person outside of those other options in Condition 6. Sometimes what we often see at the local court is a defendant who may be prepared to consent to an interim or final ADVO with Condition 6 included, so long as there is already a written agreement in place for them to see their children. This often happens, and police or the defendant's solicitor might approach the protected person asking them to consent to a written agreement in relation to contact with children. In those circumstances, what we would recommend is that no agreement is signed without obtaining legal advice, and the Domestic Violence Unit or the DVDS solicitor may be available at that local court to assist with providing protected persons advice in those circumstances. Written agreements are not legally binding agreements, and either parent can withdraw their consent at any time. What this means is that it's really important that any agreement reached is safe, workable, and is in the best interests of the children. Agreements of that kind of nature will have the best chance of working out in the long run. It's also important to remember that when entering into a written agreement, that doesn't nullify the other conditions of the AVO. It might outline the nature of any contact the defendant might be able to have with the protected person as it's agreed between the two of them, but it doesn't nullify the other conditions. So, for example, if the parents agree that the defendant can contact the protected person by text message only about the children, and then the defendant contacts the protected person by calling them, this may be considered a breach of the AVO because the agreement was for text messages only.
I see. And do you have some examples of what parenting agreements might include?
So, firstly, the agreement does need to be in writing. Ideally, what we would want is for it to be signed and dated, but that's not an actual requirement. The agreement should include the names of the parties and subject child or children, and it should also outline the nature of the contact the defendant is going to have with the protected person about the children. This is really important because if the agreement is not clear about when and how a defendant can have this contact, the defendant may breach the AVO. So a couple of examples might include a defendant being able to call a protected person, for example, each Tuesday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. so that they can speak to the children. So what the agreement might say is, the defendant can call the protected person's mobile phone at 6 p.m. each Tuesday and Thursday to have telephone contact with the children. So in that example, the defendant can call the protected person at those times, but if they call the protected person at any other time other than 6 p.m. Tuesday and Thursday, that may constitute a breach of the AVO. Another example might be an agreement for the defendant to spend time with the children. That kind of agreement might say something like, the defendant will spend time with the children from 4 p.m. Friday until 4 p.m. Sunday, with changeover to occur at McDonald's car park. If the defendant is then permitted to have contact with the protected person at changeover, then that would not be a breach of the AVO if they do have contact at changeover. But it's important to remember that whilst that written agreement might provide and allow for that contact to occur outside the usual terms of the AVO, the defendant still may breach the AVO if their behaviour breaches another condition, for example, if they assaulted the other party at that changeover.
What about the situation if an AVO has a condition that says the defendant must not go to the victim's or the person in need of protection's house? Can a parenting agreement provide for changeovers to occur at that house?
So that's a question that often comes up when we're at the local court. And there's a little bit, I suppose, of difficulty in that police sometimes interpret that differently at different stations. But in general, if the written agreement allows for the defendant to attend the property at a certain time, say, for example, to collect the children, then it probably wouldn't be a breach of the AVO if they attend at that particular time to collect the children. But if they attended at a different time than what was agreed to in that written agreement, then that would almost certainly be a breach of the AVO. Again, it's a matter for police to prosecute that potential breach, but that's certainly a potential outcome.
And I suppose that's why it is best, where possible, to make changeover locations away from the home.
So it's usually easier for the parties if the changeover location is a public place. It usually provides an extra level of safety for a protected person, but also it provides an extra level of security for a defendant as well, because it is a public place, and it may provide a buffer for them as well in terms of them potentially being security footage if there were any allegations made about a changeover incident. Mm-hmm. The other tip that I would have in terms of drafting any kind of written agreement relates to time limits. So it is really good if we can put some time limits into when an agreement is going to start and when an agreement is going to finish. So, for example, it could be that the parties only want to enter into a temporary agreement that only covers a period from when the initial court date is until the next adjourned date, in which case you could include in the parenting plan that the parenting agreement starts on the date that they're at court, and you can say that it expires on the next court date. The other kind of expiration could be that it's an agreement that's put in place pending the parties attending mediation. So you could also put effectively a sunset clause into that agreement that says it expires when the parties attend mediation as well.
Mm-hmm. And what happens if a written agreement is not complied with?
So because the written agreement is not actually a court order, it actually can't be enforced. So if the protected person decides that they don't want to have that agreement anymore, they can withdraw their consent. If the defendant decides they don't want to have that agreement anymore, the defendant can withdraw their consent to that written agreement. And basically what that would do is it would put the parties back in a situation where they still have all the other conditions in condition six. So all those other options remain available to both of the parties to try and reach a new agreement. And if they were still not able to utilise those other options, then there's always an option of commencing court proceedings if that was necessary.
Mm-hmm. And do you have to have a written agreement to have a condition six included in an AVO?
So there's no requirement for a written agreement to be in place in order for the court to impose condition six on an AVO. But there are some local court magistrates who won't include condition six without there being a written agreement that's in place. And in those circumstances, we would still recommend that both the parties get some legal advice before they sign any written agreement. But in particular, they might be the kind of circumstances where you do have a temporary agreement in place that just tides the parties over for a short period of time, pending them being able to attend a mediation and try and put in place a more full agreement about the future arrangements for their children.
And in terms of when you were discussing about time limits, would you sometimes include as a time limit, for example, this parenting agreement applies pending the parties attending a mediation?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something that we often include in written agreements that are created on the day. It can be a really stressful time for both the defendant and the protected person when they're at the local court, especially on a first return date if it's the first time either of them have had proceedings in the local court. And in those circumstances, that's the kind of circumstances where you would potentially have a really short-term agreement that is only put in place just to tide people over pending them being able to attend mediation. And so it might be that the agreement is for the defendant to only have a couple of hours one afternoon with the children or with the child. Mm-hmm. And in those circumstances, that might only be in place for 4 weeks. And the parties might also then agree that they're both going to approach a mediation service to start that mediation process where they can sit down away from that really stressful court date and then be able to, I guess, put a little bit more thought and have a bit more time to consider what a long-term agreement might look like.
I think that's a really important point because I know at the court setting there can be a lot of pressure on people in need of protection to enter into agreements, as you've discussed, and it's really important that people remember there's no obligation to enter into the Clause 6 parenting agreement just because it's in the AVO.
Yeah, that's right. Neither party can force the other party to reach an agreement. And like I said, you have that option of having that really short temporary agreement that can be put in place. Mm. But also either party can withdraw their consent to any parenting agreement that's put in place at any point in time. So even if there is an agreement that's reached, if that's not working for either party can withdraw their consent to that, and then they'll have to go back to looking at the other options in condition six in terms of getting a new agreement in place.
Yes, and it's also important to remember that any agreements can just be for telephone or FaceTime contact. They don't necessarily need to include face-to-face contact.
Yeah, that's right. The parties effectively can agree on whatever contact arrangements that they think are the most appropriate. And that may include just a telephone call. It may include a FaceTime call. It might be weekend time. It could be supervised time. All of those options are all viable options, and they're all going to be, I guess, on the table, but they're probably not all going to be appropriate for every matter. And so that's why it's really important for both parties to get some family law advice in terms of what might be the most appropriate kind of arrangements for the children involved in that matter.
Exactly. And what if you do leave the court without a written agreement, but condition six is there?
So the other sections in condition six allow or provide a mechanism for the parties to still be able to get an agreement. So it's not essential that the parties have reached an agreement on the day at court. And if they haven't, then they still have the option of negotiating an agreement through a solicitor. They can negotiate that agreement at a mediation. So condition 6.2.6b offers that option. And then there's also an option available of applying to the court for some orders to be put in place. So that's usually the last option that people would utilise. They would try and utilise the options of negotiating through a lawyer or negotiating via a mediation in order to get that agreement in place. There's also the option, I suppose, if you leave court and your matter's adjourned for 2 weeks and you don't have an agreement on the day you leave court, there's potentially an option to negotiate an agreement on that next court date when you come back in 2 weeks' time. The DVLO may be able to assist in negotiating, or if the defendant is represented and the protected person is there and there's a solicitor assisting the protected person from the DVPS or the domestic violence unit, there's that option available to try and negotiate something that way as well.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose another classic question that we get asked is, can a written agreement be in the form of a text message, or does it need to be on a separate piece of paper?
So ideally we would want them to be on a piece of paper, whether that's written in handwriting or whether that's typed or dated and signed. That would be the ideal kind of agreement. But certainly agreements can be via email or can be via text message. The important thing to remember, especially from a defendant's perspective though, is that if you leave court and you don't have an agreement in place that says you can text, communicate with the protected person via text or via email or calling telephone numbers, then you can't just send the text message in order to try and get that agreement in place. You need to have a written agreement that allows for text messages to be sent before you can actually start sending those text messages. So you may have to go back through a lawyer or go to mediation first, but absolutely, if you have an agreement that says you're permitted to text, then text messages would be an appropriate way, or email would be an appropriate way of being able to communicate those written agreements.
So that's why a common condition included in these kinds of agreement is that the defendant is permitted to contact the person in need of protection by text message for the purpose of discussing the child's wishes or matters relating to the child.
Yeah, that's certainly something that we do see in a lot of these written agreements, mechanisms for communication between the parents in terms of day-to-day matters involving the children, or if the children are sick or something like that. What I would say about those conditions is it would be better if they're as not necessarily strict, but as defined as possible, because if you do have a condition that says the defendant can text basically about anything relating to the child or the children, then you may find the protected person may find themselves in a position where the defendant is constantly texting, asking about the children. So sometimes ways that that's been dealt with has been to limit the amount of text messages that can be sent in a day, or to simply say they can only text if it's in relation to changing the contact arrangements. So there are mechanisms to be able to deal with that, but you kind of want to be as specific as possible in the parenting plan so that the AVO remains as enforceable as possible from the perspective of police. Because if there is a complaint to be made suggesting that there is a breach of the AVO, then if the parenting agreement allows for certain things to happen and that's what's been happening, it may be difficult for the police to be able to prosecute any breach that's alleged.
I agree. I think that's very worthwhile information. So if you are writing a written agreement, what are your key tips?
So my top three key tips are that you should be as specific and defined as possible. You should include the names and dates of birth of the parties and the children. And where possible, you should include a start date and an end date so that it's clear to the parties when the agreement starts, when the first phone call can be made or the first spend time with arrangements are going to happen, and then also if this is intended to be a long-term agreement or if it's a temporary short-term agreement to be put in place pending something else happening.
Mm-hmm. And the last question for you today is, who can a client call for family law advice and assistance if they want to work out a Condition 6 agreement?
So anyone can contact Law Access. The phone number is 1300 888 529, and both the defendant and the protected person can contact Law Access, and then they'll be pointed in the right direction as to where's the best place for them to be able to get any legal advice.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for your time today, Melanie.
Thank you.